Utah Foundation recently said goodbye to Communication Director Dan Bomas. Dan has been the voice of this podcast for several years, and we hope he'll continue to moonlight for us now and then on voice work. Before he left, we sat down to talk about his long career as a communicator and his plans for the future. This is Utah Thrives, the Utah Foundation podcast. I'm Peter Reichhardt. Dan, do you want to tell us a little bit about your plans and what you're thinking about doing now that you're moving along?
Well, as you're aware, I've had some health issues through the years, and so I need to be ready to accommodate those and potentially go back into cancer treatment when that's warranted. And I've also had some projects rattling around in my head for a long time, and if I'm going to do them, well, now is the time.
Sure.
So I will advise you to keep an eye out for a book entitled Ground is Where Electricity Goes to Die.
Mm-hmm.
That's about you know, how electricity works and how connectors work, and I hope it will be entertaining as well as factual, but I also am interested in writing a book about J.Hugh Cox family, which is among my pioneer ancestors, and one of J.Hugh Cox's sons was my great-grandfather, but another was a member of the Mormon Battalion who was murdered on his way back to Utah in 1848. So it focuses on the year 1848.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a couple of other projects that I have in mind. I don't know if you remember the character Eutychus from the Book of Acts in the New Testament. He fell asleep during church, which has been known to happen. But he was unfortunately up in the third floor of the building in the rafters, and he fell down on the floor and was killed. And the Book of Acts details how the Apostle Paul restored him to life, and the word Eutychus in Greek means lucky. So our lucky teenager.
Let's talk about, Dan, your upbringing and where you grew up. I mean, the people have been hearing your voice on this podcast for how many years now?
Well, we've been doing it now for about 4 years.
About 4 years, and you've been telling other people's stories, but let's talk about your story a little bit. Where did you grow up?
I was born in Seattle, lived there till I was five, moved to Utah in 1961, you know, just was a typical kid. Our family moved to Hawaii in 1967. And I had the good fortune to go to a very wonderful private school called Punahou while I was there. And at Punahou, it opened my eyes to a much bigger perspective. This was in the middle of the Vietnam War, and you know, I may not have been at Woodstock, but I certainly was witness to the music mm-hmm. that was going on in the late 60s, and that's where I listened to KKUA and KPOI, and got very interested in radio. And my mother had trained to work in radio. My father actually did that for a living at various stages, but other than that, both of my parents are teachers. Was a lot of my background. Our family came back to Utah in 1970 and graduated from Orem High School and went to Brigham Young University.
Mm-hmm.
Served a mission in South Korea for the church, and came back, you know, got married, had kids. It happens.
Mm-hmm. So it's genetic that you have this commanding, mellifluous voice, or was there a point when you were a kid where you decided you were going to speak with authority?
Oh, well, I hope it doesn't sound like an affectation, because
no, it doesn't.
It's just what comes out of my body. But yeah, it is genetic to some degree. My younger son has a deeper voice even than I do.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, my parents were singers and So I had that, I guess, advantage. And then I had excellent music teachers in high school and college as well.
Now, a lot of people who of a certain age that grew up here associate you with rock and roll.
Oh,
Can you talk about how that started?
I was working down in New Mexico in Farmington, and the news director of KRSP at the time hired me to come to Salt Lake, and that's how I got here. And then not too much after that, I began working with John Carter, who is still on the radio on Arrow 103, and we developed some chemistry that turned into the John and Dan show. In 1989, we moved from KRSP to KLZX, Z93, and worked together there until 1996. And then I moved on from there to a company called Metro Networks, which was an outsourced provider of radio news and traffic reports, with a couple of stops at other stations along the way. And then wound up on the public radio station in Salt Lake, KUER, and was there for 12 years. And that also led to an opportunity to teach at the University of Utah.
So how many years total was your rock and roll radio career?
We did the John and Dan show for 16 years.
Yeah, okay. So more rock and roll than news.
And rock and roll and a couple of years doing country music when Z93 changed format to Cable 90.
Let's talk about your time at the public radio and what was that transition like for you, and what did you learn from that experience?
Well, I'd always been a listener and contributor to public radio, even through the years I was working in commercial broadcasting. And so when the opportunity came up, I jumped at it and was delighted to be part of that world, which is very different from commercial broadcasting. That also allowed me to develop my chops as a reporter.
Sure.
I produced some things that through the years that I was proud of there at KUER. And then had the opportunity in 2015 to join Utah Foundation as a communications director and take advantage of the fact that I know a lot of people.
Sure.
In the media and in the public policy and elected office areas, and then of course along the way I also managed to develop multiple myeloma, which is more than likely a result of my exposure to radioactive fallout from nuclear weapons tests when I was a kid. And so I've had a couple of stem cell transplants, which is a major procedure, and but I recovered from both of those and was able to work most of the time.
Sure. Let's talk about the journalism world a little bit. And I guess the world of radio has probably changed a bit less than in the world of print journalism, for instance. But I was a journalist, a newspaper editor early in my career. Certainly since the 90s, it does seem like things have changed a lot. The internet changed things. So what are some of your thoughts on how journalism has changed for good and ill?
Well, when I got started, local stations were required to produce a certain percentage of non-entertainment programming. And there were limits on ownership, so that even the biggest companies could own no more than basically seven AM-FM combinations in various markets. And so the big companies concentrated on the big markets, New York, LA. And most other stations were owned by families or small town group operators. And then through the Reagan years, 1996 especially under Clinton, those rules were relaxed and relaxed and relaxed, and now the biggest operators like iHeartRadio own thousands of stations in markets all over the country. And that, more than anything else, changed the business. Technology also changed the business, where you can have one person in one market voice tracking dozens of radio stations that are owned by a group. And so the opportunities for individuals in commercial broadcasting were limited. A lot of jobs were lost along the way. KRSP had three full-time news people when I started there in 1979. Mm-hmm. As time went on, they had just one.
Does what we're doing right now play into the radio world a little bit? I mean, when you think about the fact that you can now download your favorite podcast onto your phone, put on your headphones, go for a walk with your dog, and listen to virtually, usually commercial-free, half-hour or hour long-form interesting discussion. Does that begin to eat into the radio world, do you think, or is it still too much in its infancy?
Well, the one thing podcasts don't do for you is help you keep an ear on the world. And so if you want to not be surprised by somebody asking you, hey, did you hear about X?
Sure.
Then it helps to have some connection to the world of news where you might have heard about X.
Right, right.
And radio is very good for that.
Yeah, it's kind of like the difference between a daily paper and a weekly or monthly magazine. Right,
right. Right. Yeah. But again, regulatory changes through the years, the so-called fairness doctrine was abolished, and radio stations were allowed to go off the deep end in terms of their talk programming, and many of them have found that to be profitable.
Sure, sure. And we see the same model in national 24-hour news. That seems to be the business model, too. A lot of opinion and not so much fact. And then the viewers want to be able to get the opinion they like, right? Mm-hmm. And networks are going to have a very consistent opinion for those to accommodate those viewers.
And people choose what resonates. Now, I am not like some folks who've been in the broadcasting business for a long time. I'm not going to lament that that is the case. Mm-hmm. You know, that is simply the way the business and the technology and the social role of broadcasting has developed.
Sure.
And as you point out, you can find a podcast that matches your interests and listen to that now. The answer to the speech that you object to, according to John Stuart Mill and his Marketplace of Ideas, is more speech. Mm-hmm. Well, there's more speech out there now than there's ever been.
Sure.
And more people have access to the ability to produce a podcast and be heard mm-hmm, mm-hmm. than certainly did in the early days of radio, when it was a business that had a high barrier to access.
Sure. Now, you've been with Utah Foundation now for five years, is that
mm-hmm.
right? Maybe my perception is off, but it is my perception that even within those 5 years, there's been a change in the journalism landscape. And one of the things I'm curious about is your thoughts on where we've been going, number one, in terms of the ability for citizens to get the information they need. Obviously, we at Utah Foundation, we think that everything we're working on, those are the top priorities of the people of the state, and we want to get it out there. We want to get people civically engaged. But when you kind of have a shrinking, in some respects, journalism landscape, how does that affect the ability for citizens to get that crucial information that they need to understand what's going on, particularly the level of government, state, and local, that mean the most to them?
Well, no, I think you really do have to seek it out. And let me give you an example. We at Utah Foundation have been writing about Tier 3 gasoline mm-hmm. for a number of years. That's a low sulfur formulation of gasoline that the government now requires refineries around the country to make. And when you put Tier 3 gasoline into a vehicle that's designed to use it, you have far, far lower exhaust emissions than you do with the previous kinds of vehicles and gasoline. Okay. I asked the dealership where I bought my pickup truck if my truck was designed to burn Tier 3 gasoline. It's new enough that it should be. They didn't know. Hmm. In fact, they had never heard of Tier 3 gasoline and had not been part of the discussion, in spite of the fact that Governor Herbert has mentioned in a couple of his addresses to the legislature, and it's been discussed in Utah Foundation reports as being a potentially very effective way to address our air quality problems. Okay, you have to have chosen to study this, and the activists who've been involved in this directly are very familiar with the issue, but many, many people are not.
Right.
And it's the same with the tax reform that's recently been enacted by the Utah legislature. Why do we need this tax reform? Well, Utah Foundation rather has studied these tax issues exhaustively and pointed out that the state of Utah is realizing less and less revenue from its sales tax.
Proportionally.
The income tax, which is dedicated revenue designed to support public schools, wasn't necessarily the best way to address the state's overall revenue needs, or at least there was an argument for flexibility there. And so you kind of have to go looking for this information to find it. Now, at Utah Foundation, we've been in the fortunate position to help people find that. With all our research studies are available online, we've had the podcast that addresses some of these issues.
In a sense, then, the onus is much more on the citizen. And yet, meanwhile, we have a citizenry that seems to be much more interested in the national news dramas that never seem to be ending.
And they pick the programs to listen to or the TV cable channels to watch that match their own viewpoint.
But more to the point, they're spending their bandwidth on issues that don't really have that much impact on their lives at the expense of those state and local issues mm-hmm. that have a significant impact on their lives. Let's looking ahead, as technology continues to change things, do you see potential for technology to come to the rescue, whether it's through something along the lines of a more democratized reporting world through YouTube, or does it just create more chaos and noise?
Well, it creates more silos, in my opinion. You have more and more programming addressing narrower and narrower points of view. And so I don't necessarily think the answer is technology. I think mm-hmm. the answer is leadership. Mm-hmm. I think that there's a place for political leadership to bring these issues to the people when they need to understand them. If I could commend Governor Herbert for his citation on several occasions of Utah Foundation research, when it's been important, as it was in the tax reform debate, as it has been in the air quality debate, and there are other members of the Utah legislature, others in local government, others in positions of political and business leadership who have tried to bring these issues. But the individuals have to make the choice as to what they're going to pay attention to. I taught my students at the University of Utah, the most important thing anybody in this society has to give, it's more important than their loyalty, it's more important than their money. The most important thing anybody in this society has to give is their attention. And once you can capture someone's attention, everything else follows.
Sure. It ends up being kind of the core of good citizenship, too, mm-hmm. right? Looking ahead, what do you see on the horizon for Utah? What good things do you see, and are there things that worry you? From a broad historical perspective.
All the issues that Utah Foundation studies are obviously important in terms of community growth, in terms of planning, in terms of providing resources for education and other public responsibilities. All of that is important. But I think people in Utah and in the country generally also need to quit fighting. You know, there's such a division in the community between, and it's easy to say red and blue, but I look at on Facebook, on people I used to go to high school with, and we're so inclined to start throwing things at each other.
But I wonder, are we really that divided?
Yes, we are.
Well, I mean it in this sense. If we have conversations with each other on the street, if we run into each other face to face, that you don't feel that division. But somehow when it's filtered through
social media
or the national media drama, it's a little bit analogous to people in their cars. You're much more likely to be rude in your car than you are in the flesh, right?
Right.
And so sometimes I do kind of wonder, how divided are we? When we interact with people in our communities, don't we feel like, for the most part, our concerns are the same, and that we're maybe just not focused enough on the common ground in these national and political debates?
Well, I think there are people who are, to some degree, open-minded and, more importantly, open-hearted.
I want to thank you for all your years of service to Utah Foundation. We're certainly going to miss you, but I know that you're going to still be in the arena in various ways, so we certainly wish you good luck with all these upcoming endeavors and look forward to seeing them come to fruition.
Well, thank you. Yeah, if you see something by Dan Bomas on Amazon, please buy it.
Will do.
Okay.
Thank you, Tim.
Thanks.